Investors are not putting a pep in Deliveroo's step this morning. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Shares of the London-based food delivery giant have plunged as much as 30% in the city's biggest stock market debut in more than a decade. Amazon-backed Deliveroo began trading at the low end of its expected range at just over $5.30 a share. But in the first half hour of trade, shares were temporarily halted to calm volatility. The company's chief executive said the goal of the listing is to build a definitive online food company. But investors have concerns about the way it operates, as the BBC's Vishala Sripathma explains.
Lockdowns have flipped hospitality on its head, but there have been some winners.
This is the year of food. Crispy food. Smoky food. For everyone food. Food you
didn't know you wanted. Deliveroo has seen demand for its services peak through the pandemic, just in time for its stock market debut in London. But last week, a number of investment firms said they would reject the listing, including Aviva Investors. This is David Cumming.
There are actually a number of red flags, I think, around Deliveroo and the sustainability of its business model. But employee rights is the key one, the sustainability of that aspect of the business model.
Aviva isn't alone. Six big UK investment firms say they will not buy Deliveroo shares after concerns over workers' rights.
It's not about necessarily the profit that you make in the first week when shares can be volatile and they might bounce in the market. It's about thinking as a potential long-term owner of a business. And as a long-term owner of Deliveroo, we wouldn't be comfortable that the business model is sustainable and that the way in which its workforce is employed is sustainable for the long term.
Delivery drivers aren't classified as workers. They're self-employed, meaning they don't earn minimum wage from the company and they aren't entitled to benefits like vacation or sick pay. For drivers like Shaf, that's a problem.
I want to be paid a decent amount. I'm not asking for £100 every day. I'm asking for a decent amount, a hourly guarantee or an hourly wage that basically offsets the time that I'm spending.
Trade unions have called for Deliveroo's self-employed drivers to go on strike. In response, Deliveroo says there are 50,000 riders on their books who can choose when and where they work, the sort of flexibility most employers don't offer. Before it went public, the company also set up a so-called cash payment thank you fund for drivers who've delivered at least 2,000 meals and worked with Deliveroo for at least a year. In London, I'm the BBC's Vishala Sripathma for Marketplace.
Checking some other numbers now, shares across Europe are little changed, with key benchmarks in London, Paris and Frankfurt down in the 0.25% range. Meanwhile, fresh figures from China today showed manufacturing activity in March expanded at the fastest pace in 3 months. H&M today vowed to work to regain trust and confidence of its Chinese consumers. That's after the retailer faced boycotts from customers over the company's decision to stop sourcing cotton from China's Xinjiang province. The BBC's Stephen Ryan explains why the move became so controversial.
Last week, the US, the UK, the European Union and Canada imposed sanctions on Chinese officials over alleged human rights abuses, including forced labour, against Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang in western China. That's a big region when it comes to global cotton production. So at that stage, comments H&M made last year that it would stop sourcing cotton in the region and expressing concern over forced labour allegations resurfaced on social media. It was a furious backlash. In a video I watched, one man ripped one of the company's t-shirts in two as he loudly criticised the quality of their clothes and said the company's concerns were only rumours. Some landlords have even shut their stores in some Chinese cities. That's a problem for H&M. China is their fourth biggest country market. So in a statement today, they're being very cautious. There's no mention of Xinjiang specifically, but they do say they want to regain the trust of customers and business partners in the country.
The company also released its earnings results today. How's it faring a year into the pandemic?
Well, shares in H&M are down 2.25% in Sweden this morning. The company posted a loss in the quarter ending in February of $159 million. Compare that with a profit of 2.5 billion Swedish kroner or $285 million a year earlier. March sales were higher than a year ago. Bear in mind, though, last March, many stores were starting to shut at the beginning of many of the COVID restrictions and lockdowns in Europe.
Plenty to watch with H&M. The BBC's Stephen Ryan. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Tech giants have been repeatedly raked over the coals by politicians who allege they've played a role in the spread of misinformation on their platforms. At the end of last year, Facebook, Twitter, and Google began collaborating with governments to fight conspiracy theories around COVID-19 vaccines. Now, Google has pledged more financial support for the ongoing information battle, as the BBC's Rory Ketlin-Jones reports.
Google says its goal in making this contribution to the European Media and Information Fund is to make sure people get what it describes as the information you want, the answers you need, and the accuracy you deserve. The money will be used to strengthen media literacy and support fact-checking. But critics will point to the search giant's own role in spreading misinformation, in particular the role its video service YouTube has played in serving up ever more extreme content once a user expresses an interest in conspiracy theories. YouTube says it has taken strong action against misinformation, tweaking its algorithm so that users aren't led down conspiracy theory rabbit holes, and removing millions of videos which spread fake news about vaccines and the coronavirus. But Google's revenue from YouTube ads in the last quarter of 2020 soared to more than $7 billion. Spending roughly $30 million on this drive against disinformation won't make much of a dent in its finances. I'm the BBC's Rory Ketlin-Jones for Marketplace.
Finally, a 121-year-old chocolate bar has been discovered in an attic here in England. It's still in its original wrapper and was part of a batch commissioned by Queen Victoria to boost morale for troops in South Africa. It's a cool find, but maybe not one that's so tasty anymore. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.